की जय। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। और अपने ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भगवद् गीता की जय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this is we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada set up a study course in the early days. In I think it was 1968. All the devotees, they were getting draft papers. Vietnam War was on. And so they approached Prabhupada, what do we do? They wrote to the draft board and told them that we're part of a religious organisation, we're doing a sabbatical. And at that time, the United States, they appreciated that, so anybody who was in any religious order, they didn't draft them into the forces for the Vietnam War. And so then Prabhupada, because they got so many applications from the ISKCON movement, they wrote to Prabhupada and asked him to send so many, a list of about 10 requirements they wanted to understand. How are they being trained? What's the course? How long does it take? What's the hours? And it looked like, oh, we'll never be able to fill this in. When I first read it, and Prabhupada, within a few seconds, he filled it all in and sent it off. And when the devotees saw what he put, they were amazed at how quickly he'd assessed everything and made it such a easy an easy thing for the draft board to accept. He put that in the morning, we rise early, we have meditation, and then we have an hour study, Bhagavad Gita, and a few hours general service, in the afternoon 4 hours chanting the names of God, and then he put the break times as well. And in the evening, in the morning, Srimad Bhagavatam, in the evening, Bhagavad Gita. And so they accepted it. I expected that Prabhupada would have to put so many study courses throughout the day, but he just put exactly what we did. And because he explained it so nicely, they just accepted it immediately. So this is the evening session, we do Bhagavad Gita. And so I was thinking that, anyway, we'll read the verse and then we can start to speak about the verse. It's a very famous verse. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pashyati tasyaham na pranashidmi Satya Mena Pranashati. Anybody recognize that one? Yeah. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So we can repeat that. For one who sees me everywhere,
for one who sees me everywhere,
and sees everything in me,
and sees everything in me,
I am never lost,
I am never lost,
nor is he ever lost to me.
Nor is he ever lost to me.
Purport by divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
A person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to be, or to see all separate manifestations of the material nature, but in each and every instance he is conscious of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is a development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. An intimate relationship between the Lord and his devotee then exists. In that stage, the living entity can never be annihilated. Nor is the personality of Godhead ever out of sight of such a devotee. To merge into Krishna is spiritual annihilation. A devotee takes no such risk. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita 5.38. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanaina santa sadaiva vidayeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achintya gunasvarupam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Shama Sunda, situated within the heart of the devotee. At this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. In the case of a yogi who sees the Lord as Paramatma within the heart, the same applies. Such a yogi turns into a pure devotee. I cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. Omigaanti mirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshuram militam jena tasmai shri guruve namah. Nama om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityamne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Hastachade Shatayane. So what class of devotee is Lord Krishna speaking about in Prabhupada? The three classes of devotees. The one who sees the deity and very devotedly worships the deity, but doesn't really see other devotees as so important as the deity, sometimes even neglecting others. So this is Kanista Adhikari. And then there's a devotee who appreciates the deity, appreciates the devotee's position, and reciprocates in a suitable way. He also sees innocent living entities who are trapped in the material world, and he's merciful to them, he tries to deliver them. But he ignores those who are inimical towards God, towards Krishna consciousness. So this is Madhyam Adhikari. Adhikar means equalification. And so the last one is Uttama Adhikari. He sees Krishna inside everything and outside everything. Everything he does, he sees Krishna. So what's this verse speaking about? Does anybody? Anybody has it, I guess? This one, the last one, yeah. And so I said, this is the purpose of this movement, is to bring everybody to that standard where we cannot help but see Krishna everywhere. And Bhagavad Gita is like a sandwich. It's got the first six chapters, and the last six chapters are like the outside of the sandwich, and the middle six chapters are like the essence of the sandwich. When you get a sandwich, what do you say? It's a bread sandwich. No. You say, what's inside? It's this sandwich or it's that sandwich. And so Bhagavad Gita, the middle six chapters are actually the real essence. It's speaking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how to become a devotee. The first six are more of how to work in such a way that we become free from the material energy, how we become trapped in the material energy. The last six chapters are overview, and they put in everything in a philosophical way. Jnana Yoga. But I say the beginning, so one of these middle six chapters is the ninth chapter, and that's the essence. It's talking about pure devotional service. But strangely enough, in the next chapter, Lord Krishna says, now listen, O Arjuna, while I tell you of something more important than what you've just heard or you've heard before. So how is that? We've got really to the essence of the essence, and then Lord Krishna said, I know something more important. How can that be? I said, there's two things. He's referring to what Krishna was speaking about in the 7th and 8th chapters, where it's talking about the energies of the Supreme Lord and some of his opulences. And in this chapter, in the 10th chapter, he's going to speak more about those opulences. So it's referring to those two chapters. But also, it's referring to the 9th chapter indirectly. Because to come to pure devotional service means we have to work for it. Is that right? Does it come easy? Does it drop off the sky? Or does it grow on trees? I see it can. It can grow on trees. And so, straight away in the 10th chapter, Lord Krishna starts speaking about the opulences of the Supreme. Shark, very good. And of bodies of water, I am the ocean. What's any anymore? Of mountains, I am the Himalayas, and like this, of Maruts, of the what's the Maruts? Anyway, this was, I should read the 10th chapter. So I was thinking that we have to come to that point in our everyday activities, seeing Krishna everywhere. It's not that all of a sudden there's a big illumination and everything changes. But as we work at devotional service, we have to see Krishna in every aspect of life. Most of us are probably not living in the temple. We don't have full facility to have a full spiritual program at home. We're working outside, is that right? And so we think that we're in a disadvantageous position. But actually that's not the case. Krishna's allowing for that. We can see Krishna in our everyday work, in our everyday activities, by just being a little bit thoughtful. And so this is how we become Krishna conscious. Instead of seeing the material, we see the spiritual. And then we can come to this platform of seeing Krishna everywhere. So this is practical. Prabhupada said it's just like when the child's out of the house, how do you remember the child? Does anybody know that verse? He says that it's like the child's shoes are there. And as soon as we see the child's shoes, we remember the child. So similarly, Krishna's energies are always here. And when we see Krishna's energy, we remember Krishna. So I say in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's one nice story about the Avadhut Brahman. He wasn't very learned. Have we got any scholars in here? Put your hands up. Any scholars? Okay, so this is like the Avadhuta Brahman. He wasn't a scholar. Have we got any very devotional people in here? Put your hands up. No? Oh, one. I've got one. And so generally, we think we're lacking in these things. And so this Avadhuta Brahman was in the same situation. One day, King Yadu, he was passing by, and he saw he had a vision of knowledge. In those times, people were taught how to see by a person's external demeanour what sort of person he was, whether he was spiritual, material, how advanced he was. And so King Yadu could see by this, one of his subjects, this person's very advanced in spiritual life. He's actually in bliss. But I know this person, he never studies the Shastra. He's not known to be very devout. So he very humbly approached this Avadhuta Brahman and he asked him, how have you become so advanced in spiritual life? And because he asked him very nicely, he agreed to give him an answer. And he said, "My dear king," he says, I have 26 gurus. And through these 26 gurus, I've become very detached from this world. This particular chapter speaking about Gyan Yoga. So are we Gyanis? Are we Gyanis?
No.
No. What are we? We're Bhaktas. So why have they put that in the Bhagavatam? Bhagavatam says, what's that verse? Dharma Projita Kaitravatra, rejecting all sub-religious principles. It's explained how we can use Gyan to increase our bhakti. With proper understanding of the situation, this facilitates our bhakti. Very difficult to become a real bhakti without some knowledge, isn't it? Otherwise it becomes just sentiment. We don't really know what we're doing. Why are you doing that? I don't know. What kind of bhakti are we? And so this Gyan is seeing the world through Gyan, through real knowledge. And so what was the first guru? Can anybody remember? Anybody read the Bhagavatam? It's very easy actually. All trees.
Arjuna.
No. First guru. We're all sat on it. Well, we've sat about 20 foot up from it. It's the earth. He learned from the first guru is the earth. What do we learn from the earth?
Tolerance.
Tolerance. Why? Because we see so many weird people are abusing the earth, don't we? Mines, they're digging the earth up, they're getting all the oil, all the coal, all the gold, they're just taking it out of the earth without any thoughts of why it's there or who it belongs to. And the earth just tolerates. So many impious living entities are trampling all over the earth. Is that right? And she tolerates. Up to a point. At some point she rebels. And then what do we have? What's the Earth's rebellion? Earthquakes. Tsunamis. So many whirlwinds, tornadoes.
Global warming.
What's that?
Global warming.
Yeah. Is that a real fact, that? I mean, I've heard some different tales about the global warming. I'm not sure whether it's true or not anymore. You can't believe what they're telling us nowadays, you know. So, the earth is very tolerant. So he thought, I have to be tolerant like the earth when people abuse me, when people call me names, when there's difficulty, when it's too hot, or it's raining too much. The earth's tolerating. Yes, first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, what is it? Tolerate. We have to if we don't tolerate, we don't get anywhere. It's the first thing we have to do. When Prabhupada was in Bhaktivedanta Manor, And the Sankirtan movement was well underway, and the German devotees were doing really well. They were distributing many, many books. And at that time, Prabhupada used to come to Europe, and he used to stay in Bhaktivedanta Manor. You know, he wouldn't go into the rest of Europe. He just occasionally went. I think he went to Hamburg, to the Netherlands, Sweden, to Rome, and France, and that was about it. He used to visit France two or three times, but generally he came to England. And so the devotees used to travel from different parts of Europe to, you know, if they weren't too far, to get his association. So the German devotees, they came. And the darshan had already started. And they came in a little late, but they were feeling that we were really pleasing Prabhupada. Why? Because we've just had this morning had a celebration for the 2011 Prabhupada book marathon. And so he said, Prabhupada said, if you want to please me, you should distribute books. And so when they came in, they paid their obeisances. And before they even got up, Prabhupada said, what's the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita? And they were looking at one another, and they were giving so many answers. He said, you're distributing my books, but you don't know what's in them. So immediately they felt this big. Actually, that's the first duty of the spiritual master, to take away that pride. While everyone have that pride in their heart, it's very difficult to make advancement and even to tolerate. So to tolerate, and then by tolerating, we're able to see Krishna in our life, we're able to see the process. What's the next one? What's the next thing? Guru or the Avadhut Brahman? It's a mountain. What's a mountain? What do we learn from the mountain?
Stability.
Stability, nearly. Steadfastness. Same thing, isn't it? Steadfastness. What does it do? A mountain. It stands there in all kinds of weather. Ice, rain, snow. It never moves an inch. So actually that's a sign of a devotee. He's very steadfast in his devotional service. There's two main qualities of a devotee, which is given in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What's the other one?
Mercy?
No.
Is that the verse for the sweet sound?
Yes, that's the one. You can talk about the nectar which comes from his mouth. He's always wanting to chant the holy name. Always very blissful in devotional service. So he's very happy and he's always chanting the holy name. And he's very steadfast as a result in his devotional service. Nothing deviates him. So a mountain is like steadfast. So what's the next one? How do we become steadfast in this? What does the Bhagavad Gita say about being steadfast? Steadfast practice.
Determination.
Steadfast determination, it says. I think it says that in the verse, but there's a nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Talking about determination in the mode of ignorance. What's that? It never happens. We just dream about it. What's so steadfast in the mode of passion? In the beginning, we really get into it, don't we? And then when the taste's gone, when it becomes a little difficult, forget it. Sometimes we feel like that with a devotional service, isn't it? Why? Because we're in the mode of passion. So what's devotional service in the mode of goodness? It's mentioned that
dutiful.
It's in the mode of goodness. That means duty, but it's that duty is sustained by steadfast practice of yoga. This means that every day we chant our rounds nicely. We don't know how much benefit we're getting. It's making us so steadfast in devotional service. It may not be easy. Every day we make sure we only take prasadam. Every day we read Prabhupada's books. And by this gradual process we become really, really fixed in devotional service. So this is the mountain. We We can learn from when we see a mountain. Yes, I should be steadfast. And what's the next one? The next guru. The next one is the...
River.
No, that comes a little later. It's the tree. What's the tree? What?
Tolerant.
We've just had tolerant.
Give shelter.
Humble.
No, you're right, actually. It is tolerant. So why? What's the difference between the tree and the earth? It's what? Truth.
Fruits.
Well, we get fruit from the earth as well. So right. Many fruits. The tree comes from the earth.
If we didn't have earth, we wouldn't have tree.
That's right. No, the difference is, I was saying that the earth tolerates so much, but the tree tolerates more. You remember that verse we say? Trinada pisa nichena, tarada pisa hishma, amanina manadina, kirtaniya sadari. More tolerant than the tree. Why don't you say more tolerant than the earth? Because the earth, at a certain point, she goes to Lord Brahma and says, I've had enough. Get these guys out. They go to the demigods, they go to Lord Brahma, and then they go to Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu makes arrangements to relieve the burden of the earth every so often. So that's the earth's duty. But the tree, it never says anything. It goes on tolerating. Have you ever seen a tree complain? Never. So this is what the Lord is expecting. Lord Chaitanya expects. He expects to be tolerant like a tree in all situations. I remember once I was on a walk, and this is how brutality of people's minds nowadays. There was a barbed wire fence, the temporary one they put up, and then halfway along the fence, I noticed a tree. So the tree was a little bit in the way of the fence. It was a huge tree, and he probably had to bend the barbed wire about 6 inches round the tree. What do you think they did? Get a chainsaw and cut half the tree away.
Oh my God.
Just so this line. So this is the way the tree is treated. The tree is giving us so much benefit, so much shelter. Is that right? We get fruits.
Yeah.
What else? We get the ghost warmies. That's the way they subsisted in life. Every night they used to stay under a different tree. It was providing all their necessities. Of course, these trees were wish-fulfilling trees. Kalpa Vriksha trees. But similarly, in the material world, a tree gives us shelter, gives us food, so many things. So, we have to be tolerant like a tree. Mm-hmm. What's the next one? Next one is the air. What does the Avadhuta Brahman learn from the air? So many things we can learn from, don't we? Every day we're associating with all these things. The air, what do we learn from the air? The air goes everywhere. Is that right? But is it actually connected with anything?
Keeps you alive.
Is what?
Keeps you alive, the air.
Yeah, it keeps you alive.
Detachment.
Detachment? Ah, that's very good. Very good, that's the answer. The air goes everywhere, but it doesn't actually connect with anything. It goes over filthy places and carries that aroma, but it's not actually the air that's dirty. It goes over sweet smelling places, same thing. So a devotee has to learn detachment. I have a few notes on it. Anyway. Just like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, it mentions about what's the symptoms of a transcendental person. Does everybody in here want to be a transcendental person?
Yes.
Put your hands up. Everybody wants to be. So we should know the symptoms. Is that right?
Yes.
So the symptoms are mentioned in the. Who's reading Bhagavad Gita?
I've started to.
I tried to, that's good.
Well, I started.
You started?
Yeah.
Oh, don't stop, carry on.
I need to.
We read Bhagavad Gita every day. It says in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, it says we can go on bathing the Ganges. You know the Ganges, it's very pure. When you go in, has anybody bathed in the Ganges? Mm-hmm. How do you feel when you come out?
Very pure.
Feels really. I once said it was Gopaneen, and I had a split in headache due to fasting. I thought, I don't want to do anything. What to speak of going to Ganges? And anyway, I surrendered to it. I went in the Ganges, put my gumption on, went on it. As soon as I came up, the headache had gone completely. I didn't have it for the rest of the day. And I felt completely rejuvenated. I thought, wow, this is really powerful. But it says in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction, that the Gita is more powerful. Repeatedly bathing in the Ganges purifies it spiritually also. It is, but if we bathe in the Ganges water of Bhagavad Gita every day, then very quickly we purify it. So we should use this. This is one of the things that devotees very often fail to do, to read Prabhupada's books. But actually this is the thing which we need. If we regularly read Prabhupada's books, then we'll feel always enthusiastic in devotional service. So in the Bhagavad Gita it says the symptoms of a transcendental person. What's the first symptom? How does he No, how does he
talk?
How does he speak? And what is his language? He speaks only about Krishna. That's what Prabhupada says immediately. He only speaks about Krishna. So anybody who's only speaking about Krishna, we can first qualifications there. So what is his language? What does this mean? Is it Chinese? Arabic?
Gentle.
Gentle. Why is it gentle?
Not in order not to offend others.
Yes, that's right. But anyway, the answer is that he's always gentle with his speech. But we said tolerate at the beginning. This is a very important word for this particular section. That in devotional service, many times we know we have to tolerate, but somebody may treat us in a wrong way or say some bad words to us. And so immediately the urge to speak comes. Is that right?
Yes.
Who do you think you're talking to? You know, immediately it comes up. Where does it start? It starts about here. When it comes up, you can feel it coming out. If we're not careful, it comes out. So this is a coping strategy. When we feel like a little bit of agitation in the down this area, this is the time to catch it. But actually a devotee catches it earlier because he's reading Srimad Bhagavatam. He's understanding Bhagavad Gita. That this person is actually delirious. He doesn't know what he's saying. He's sick, he's material, he's like haunted. He's haunted. Everybody's haunted in this room to some degree. To the degree we're actually engaged in material life. We're haunted by, what's more are we haunted by? By the three modes of material nature. And they're influencing us to act in so many strange ways. So when somebody treats us in a strange way, you know, we can understand. If I argue about it, what are we arguing with? Are we arguing with the person? We're arguing with the three modes of material nature against the three modes of material nature. So what does that make us? Does it make us very intelligent?
No.
So a devotee has to see like that. A devotee has to control his speech. If even under provocation, we can keep our cool, then actually we're becoming well situated. Even in England they say that. What's that saying?
Cool as a cucumber.
Cool as a cucumber. There's something. That's a common word now, isn't it? Cool. Oh, that's right. Shakespeare said, if one can keep his head, keep his cool. I don't think he used those words, did he, Shakespeare? If one can keep his What is it? His equanimity, his peace of mind, even though everybody's losing it around him, then he's considered a first-class person. So yeah, this is the air moving through the. In other words, I haven't got to the point yet. What's the next one? We're symptoms of a transcendental person. What's the next one? We've had speech. He only speaks about Krishna. What is his language? He doesn't start shouting and bawling if somebody gives him a hard time. He controls his speech in that way. Gentle, as you said. Next one. What else do we do with the body?
Sit.
How does he sit? That's a good one, isn't it? How does he sit? What does that mean?
How is he situated,
yeah. It's like a toy toys. Has anybody seen a toy toys?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What happens when you go up towards it?
This
is a symptom. So this is a symptom of a devotee. When sense gratification comes his way, he withdraws from it. He withdraws into his shell of Krishna consciousness. And then when sense gratification has gone away, then he comes out again. So he says, how he sits. And the last one?
How does he walk?
What's that mean?
Behavior.
Does he walk with a lion gait? Or does he walk on his tiptoes? Sometimes people get confused like that. How does he walk? It means, how does he go through the world? When we go through the world, there's so many things which may distract us from Krishna consciousness. But he learns how to deal with everything in a Krishna conscious way. He's not distracted from his goal. So this is all in the Bhagavad Gita. It's amazing, isn't it? So much knowledge there. The next one is fire. See, fire's got many qualities. Does anybody consider any qualities that we can learn from fire?
Clarity.
What's that?
I don't know. Clarity, you can see.
Clarity.
Clarity, you can see.
Clarity.
The light.
It illuminates.
By the illumination we can see, yeah. It illuminates. Yeah, it's not one of the qualities that's mentioned, but it is a quality of fire, you're right. It means like a lamp in a windless place. Anybody heard this out of the Bhagavad Gita?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes if you're in a still room, you can see a flame, and it's... Can you see the flame actually moving when the air's really still? Have you looked twice? Is that an electric? No. Or is it a real flame? Maybe you're not sure. It's so steady. But is that flame changing?
Yes.
It's changing?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's burning up different parts of the candle or wherever fuel is there. And so every second, every sub-second, it's changing its quality. But we can't see it. So it's a very good one, this one. This is one of the real tricks of Maya. When life's going by so fast, and we think it's not moving. People are making plans for seemingly eternal life. They're working like anything so that they can have something in the future, not thinking that time's going by. So a devotee who realizes the the precious nature of time, then he can use it properly. So time's invisible, in other words. We can't see it. When we're young, what's time like? It takes so long to go by. We have to go to school. We have to do this. We're waiting. We're urging the years by, aren't we? And then when we get into our maybe teens, then this is the enjoying period, isn't it? When we get into the teens, we get a job, we get some money, then we can start going out, spending money, enjoying. And so time's going a little faster, but not too fast. And then we get married. What does time look like when you're married? It's very...
drags on.
It goes up and down, doesn't it? But that goes very fast also. You know, somebody has a child, and then if you see him a few years later, he's already 6 years old. It seemed like yesterday. But then as time goes on, when we get past 30, 40... 50, it goes very fast. Every year I think it's Christmas again. There used to be a famous saying actually, if anything went wrong in life, people would say, ah well, it'll soon be Christmas. It's like a time, you know, to enjoy, in other words. So everybody's looking for that. We're looking, this is called, in Nectar of Devotion, it's called, what's that word? Chapala Sukha, Flickering Happiness. Bhoga Tyag, we work like anything, don't we? It's not something we enjoy doing. But what's at the back of our minds? This is called Tyag. Renounce the desire just to enjoy immediately. And then at the weekend, Bhoga, then we enjoy. Then in the evening, Bhoga, then we enjoy. So this is one quality of fire anyway, that it's imperceptible. Another quality is it's purifying. Is that right? Mm-hmm. When you want to purify something, when you see these cowboy films, when somebody gets shot, what do? Has everybody seen any cowboy films? What do when somebody's been shot? There isn't a doctor for hundreds of miles.
They pour whiskey on the wound.
They pour whiskey on the wound.
Hot lead.
They what? They put it in fire and then in whiskey. No, they put it in fire,
drink,
that's right.
Drink the whiskey first.
No, drink the whiskey. That's another way, yeah. And then they purify it and then they operate. So there's in that part of the world, in America, they have huge trees. Is that right? What do you call them?
Redwood
and
sequoia.
Sequoia. What's the difference?
Not much.
Not much.
About 20 feet.
So the sequoia trees are redwood trees. There's one called what's the biggest? General Grant, is it? Or General Sherman? There's the big tree. There's the General Sherman, General Grant. That probably about as big as this building around. And they grow probably 300 feet high, don't they? 400 feet high, maybe more. Can't see the top of them. Huge trees. But the problem is that where there's a lot of trees, and especially in the summer, what happens? What's the frequent occurrence where there's huge forests?
Rain.
The forest fire comes. And then what happens when the forest fire comes? Everything gets burnt. Is that right? Transformation.
Usually 5:30.
Oh, just a bit. Okay, this is it. So these trees, they're in the forest fire, and all the little ones, no chance. The slightly bigger ones, they last a bit longer. The even bigger ones, sometimes they may survive, but these big sequoia trees, they survive. Why? You can see them. They've got huge scars down the middle of them, where the flames have been ripping away, trying to burn them. You know, for even maybe as long as a week, until the rains come and put it out. Why are they surviving?
Their roots. Eh? Big roots, deep roots.
That's nearly it, no? Well, what happens during the forest fire? What's the forest fire heat like in the middle of a fire? It's probably white hot. Oh, it's very, very hot anyway. And this heat becomes so intense that on the tree there's some nuts. Very, very hard nuts. You can't break them with armour. So this is like the what? What's the heart like? What's a materialistic heart like?
Steel
heart. Steel nuts.
It's like it's very, very hard. What should it be like?
Soft.
Yes, but it should be very, very soft. And so this nut, it becomes white, and then all of a sudden what happens? Due to the heat, it breaks open. And then all the inside of the nut, all the seeds float to the ground. And by this time the forest fire is put out by the rain. The rain falls on the ashes there from the trees. Ash is very good fertilizer, isn't it? So they fall in the ash. And then it rains, and then what happens? then a tree comes. So how can we understand that? What does it mean? It means this ability, these other qualities. The tree is steadfast. It's very strong in its devotional. It's very strong in its situation. So a devotee who tolerates and very strong in his situation has these qualities we've mentioned before. He doesn't become attracted by the material energy. Then that devotee, the heart becomes the false ego in the heart. It becomes cracked by the fire of devotional service. In devotional service, it's like a fire, forest fire. We're having to tolerate so many things. Living in the temple, sometimes it's very intolerable. Association sometimes becomes a little bit stretched. At work, when we're out there, we're thinking, I'm practicing devotional service, but I'm going through so much difficulty. And we're told to tolerate the fire of purification, they call it. But by tolerating this situation, like the tree, by becoming very strong in devotional service, becoming a big tree, not one of the small ones, by practicing devotional service very strongly, then this fire of discontent that we're going through in devotional service, this purification, is actually cracking the hard false ego around the heart. And then when that false ego is removed, like this nut is cracked open, and it falls to the ground, it starts. Then now the seed of bhakti can actually really start to flourish. So we shouldn't be disturbed by difficulty in devotional service. It's actually a great benediction if we learn to see it in that way and apply ourselves properly. It's actually a very fertile ground for our devotional creeper to really start to grow. So anyway, these are some things I thought we'd mention about seeing the material energy in a Krishna conscious way, learning to come to the first class platform of devotional service. And that platform is seeing Krishna inside everything and outside everything, seeing nothing but Krishna. Then the devotee is completely protected. So thank you very much. So if anybody has any comments or questions, and so we can, if we're going upstairs afterwards, they can be asked there. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So it is died on the Maharaj ki. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for a very wonderful, deep and absorbing class, and how we can see Krishna everywhere. Please let us thank Swami Dayananda Maharaj for coming and giving us his time by chanting again very loudly three Hari Bol.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
And as Maharaj mentioned, he's going to stay on for a little while. So after we serve the feast, then he'll be upstairs in the seminar room where we normally have our questions and answer sessions. So probably from about a little bit past 6 until 7 o'clock, Maharaj will be there. So if you have any questions, then please take the opportunity to go and ask them with Marge and get some of his association. Okay, thank you very much, Marge. So once again, we'll ask just quickly, is there anyone here for the first time? I know I met two ladies here from Colombia earlier. Anyone else who's here for the first time? Is there a first time? Okay. What's your name?
Solomon.
Solomon. I said that, anyone know? Okay. Nice to have you with us. Where are you from?
I'm from Mongolia.
From Mongolia?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you for coming. How did you find out about the temple?
Came with a friend.
With a friend? Is that the one who shouted your name out?
Yeah.
Okay. You're the friend? Hello. Thank you for bringing him. Very nice to have you with us. You said his name is Solomon. Okay, got it. I'm not even going to try it unless you write it down for me. Basically, it's wonderful that you came. Thank you very much. And there's someone else who's here for the first time. Anyone else?
so I can embarrass you also and embarrass myself too. Okay, so it's very nice to have those of you who are here with us for the first time. Just so that you know, there's some devotees greeting guests outside today, I think. Who's greeting guests today? Okay, Gaur Kishore Prabhu is outside greeting guests. So usually the guest greeter comes and waves so everyone can see their lovely... Usually it's a nice young lady, but today it's him. So you can please go and see this gentleman. He has a nice gift for anyone who's come for the first time. Because so many of you kept going back week after week trying to get your free gift, we made Gaur Kishore stand out there. So you're not getting a free gift unless it's your first time only today, okay? So please go and see him. And anyone who would like to give their details so we can keep you posted of when nice devotees are coming to give class or when there are festivals or different programs happening, then you can please give your information there. So now we're going to serve the feast, vegetarian feast, prasadam feast here. Oh, thank you so much. Perfect. So I have a plant in the audience. So we have some courses also, just to let everyone know. The new year is starting off right. And first we'll embarrass Bhakti Dina by letting you know who the lady is who's organizing the courses for everyone here at ISKCON London. So you can just raise your hand and go, hello. This is Bhakti Veena, so she's very enthusiastically and kindly taken up the service of helping to organize nice courses here for the, in the temple for devotees and guests and everyone who comes. So there are four courses advertised out on the notice board. Three of them I remember off the top of my head. First one is Essence of Bhagavad Gita course, and that's starting on
21st.
The 21st, which is Saturday evening. 6:30 to 8:30, starting the 21st, and that runs for 5 weeks. So you can enroll or register for that course upstairs in the shop. So this is an essence of the book that Marge was speaking about this evening and speaking on, the Essence of Bhagavad Gita. Yeah.
Is it free or do you have to pay?
There is a charge for it, but it's a nominal charge. Mainly it's so that we can cover, because we give everyone booklets, and also because sometimes people register and they don't show up and... So, but if someone makes a commitment, then they're likely to show up. But it's a small fee. I don't know how much it is. 25?
Yeah,
25 for 5 weeks. So it's like $5 each week or something. So it's relatively nominal. But you can sign up for that upstairs, and it doesn't start until the 21st. You don't need to put a deposit or anything to sign up. Just sign up and, you know, like that. Then show up on the day and you can pay like that. And then another one is the a leadership course that will be given by His Grace Buddha Bhavana Prabhu from the teachings of the Bhagavatam, Lord Bhishma Dev, his passing away, and that's when?
The
28th. Which
it's a whole day.
A whole day course, that's another Saturday, right?
Yeah.
So Saturday during the day from 11?
10:30
to 5:30. That's also in the seminar room, you can register for that upstairs. And there's a Mridanga course.
Beginners.
A beginner's mridanga, so anyone who's an advanced mridanga player, please don't come. No advanced mridanga players, because you might be more advanced than the teacher. You wouldn't want to embarrass the teacher. So it's beginner, so Toto Gopinathra, please don't come on the course. this mridanga course will be, how many weeks? 10
weeks from the 2nd of February.
10 weeks from the 2nd of February on... Thursday evenings. So Thursday evenings for 10 weeks. So beginner's mridanga course, and that will be taught by Radhalal Nishwara Guru, who's here. So he'll be teaching that course. So you can also register for that. And the last one is Hare Krishna course?
Yeah, Hare Krishna course, which was yesterday. But then...
Okay, so if you wanted to take the Hare Krishna course yesterday, you missed it. Right, we will run it again, and this is a very introductory course. So for those of you who came for the very first time, this is a nice course. It's a one-day course, about 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours, usually on a Saturday. And you can come in and just learn about the Hare Krishna movement and ISKCON, how it started, what are the fundamental principles. And it's sort of like a beginner's course for anyone who really doesn't know what it's all about, that, you know, we're doing here. Why, some people say, why are you guys bald and dancing and singing in the street? Why do you hand out these books? And who is this guy here? And why is he called, keep talking about someone named Prabhupada. Who's Prabhupada? And where did that word come from? What does it mean? So this is perfect course for you to come and find out a little bit more about what it is that we do here. So all of these courses are going on regularly. Please give us your information. We can keep you posted of different courses. And if you just keep a look on the notice board or on our website, then try to keep yourself up to date. And please get involved and find out a little bit more. It behooves us all, as Maharaj was saying, to be engaged in devotional service and the regular study and reading of Srila Prabhupada's books like that. Thank you very much, Bhakti Vina. Okay, so now we're going to serve the feast. And that will be done here in the temple room and also downstairs in the restaurant. So we ask, especially those of you who are here for the first time, we'll save some spots along the wall here, and you can have a sit down. And there'll be some devotees around whom you can speak to. Maharaj will be doing questions and answers afterwards. But we'll serve here in the temple room and also downstairs in the restaurant. Those of you who stay in the temple room, we'll ask you to sit in rows so we can serve you nicely. Need a few volunteers to help with the serving, okay? A few regulars. And some volunteers to help with the cleanup afterwards. Also a few regulars, okay? Wonderful. And like that. So we ask you, please, after we say the prasadam prayer now, please avoid exiting through the door directly in front of me. Please do it only through this door at the back. Here's where Guru Kishore was standing. And because we'll be bringing the feast prasadam in this way. Okay, thank you all very much for coming. It's wonderful to have you here with us. And we hope you've enjoyed your time and that you will please join Maharaj for questions and answers afterwards at about 6:15. Okay, so now we'll say the prasadam prayer. If you know it, you can join in. If not, then you can meditate on the transcendental sound vibration. Ma prasade govinde.
Ma prasade govinde.
Nama ramani vaishnave.
Nama ramani vaishnave.
Svapa punya vatan raja.
Svapa punya vatan raja.
Vishvashona vijayate.
Vishvashona vijayate.